Telecast, the TV industry news review.
Well, hello and welcome to this bonus episode of Telecast, where I'm joined by Variety's international editor, Manori Ravindran, to take a look at the key stories emerging from the run-up to and the first day of MIPCOM. Manori, hello again. How are you doing?
Hey, Justin. I'm good. How are you?
I'm really well. I'm missing Cannes terribly. I really am. I see myself being on the croisette right now, tucking into a salad niçoise or something like that, or running around desperately late for a meeting. How have you found the last few days in the run-up to MIPCOM? Because presumably that is your busiest time of the year, right?
It is. It definitely is one of the busiest times, for sure. I mean, it's been a weird old time. I mean, as it has been for everyone. I can't recall how many emails I get saying such strange times, which I completely appreciate because they are. This year's MIPCOM is weird. I mean, you know, we're not seeing the frenzied. I mean, honestly, if it was any other day, Monday. For MIPCOM, we would be inundated, just, you know, completely beside ourselves in terms of navigating all of the news coming our way, all the press releases, trying to figure out how to package things. I mean, honestly, even in the lead up to it in the last, last week, it would have been hectic. But this year, we're not really seeing that. We're seeing companies hold off, I think, on announcing big deals. Some of those kind of big project announcements just haven't really come to pass. I think part of it is a sensitivity thing. People, you know, are dealing with, have bigger fish to fry in terms of just treading water and keeping companies afloat and keeping, trying to navigate staffing issues. And another part of it is just, you know, it's just there's simply not a, you know, because of the production hiatus, it's really impacted everything. And there's just the content simply isn't available. So we're really seeing that in terms of the news that we have and to get out there.
Well, speaking personally, we've also seen that, you know, real change in a bit of a step change running up to MIPCOM. We still have announcements for our clients, but many fewer than normal and perhaps a different type of announcement. So looking at the stories of the last few days in the run up to MIPCOM, what have you seen have been the key trends? I mean, I noticed, for example, that US networks perhaps are looking more and more overseas to fill their schedules during the pandemic. And that's something that you've covered in Variety.
It's been fascinating to sort of see the likes of someone like the CW, for example, looking to Canada, looking to the UK, looking to Italy, for example, even with Devils in the case of Sky Italia's drama there with Patrick Dempsey. Basically, they need content. And, you know, ultimately, at this point, international provides. There's a lot of shows with very high production values. And I think US broadcasters are finally kind of wising up to the fact that, you know, they're good fits for schedules. And the key thing, I think, we did a story, our US-based writer, Will Thorne, spearheaded that piece. The key thing for us was whether that's going to continue after this period is over. And honestly, from that piece and his reporting, I think that the people that he spoke with at NBC and the CW really seem to indicate that, you know, this is going to take some time, and I think that need for content will definitely endure. I think they're realizing as well that some of this programming is actually rating fairly well. I mean, okay, maybe Taskmaster going to the US wasn't necessarily the hit that everyone was hoping for, but
we saw that. That was obviously a big story about, I don't know, a couple of months ago, that Taskmaster was making its way over to the States, but it hasn't worked out.
It did not work out. I think I believe it was pulled after just one very poorly rated episode. I mean, it's a quirky show. It's very British. And I suppose it, you know, it's not really for everyone. It's slightly an acquired taste. But yeah, that didn't quite land. But shows like Tehran, for example, it's not a broadcaster, but Apple TV Plus picking that drama up. I mean, that has done gangbusters, seemingly. A lot of critical acclaim and a lot of buzz around that. So it's been quite nice actually to see some global projects really getting a nice platform and getting highlighted in ways that you wouldn't normally necessarily see. It would be a little bit, you know, we do see that, but it's a little bit far and few in between, I'd say. And now we're seeing a nice steady roll of good kind of international programs getting US eyeballs.
That's potentially a a result of, I guess, countries' approach to production, obviously, and keeping production going. And we've seen internationally, when I'm saying and internationally, outside the US, there's obviously been number of countries, Canada, France, UK in particular, have, you know, their governments have really sort of, you know, made big strides and big efforts to help production continue. And perhaps we're seeing some of the benefits of that.
100%. Certainly in the UK, I actually had a conversation with Jane Tranter for the London Film Festival. She's obviously the head of Bad Wolf and the producer of shows like His Dark Materials and Discovery of Witches Industry. But, you know, she was basically saying that the UK is, people are looking to this country in particular to, I suppose, focus production on. And just because we have the infrastructure, things are starting to get up and going, and they have actually been for some time. I think the issue obviously now is the insurance here, which I think is very much needed. And they, you know, we really need that EU approval to get things going. But yeah, I mean, the UK is sort of the go-to, and similar for places like Canada, where obviously there've been a few little roadblocks, but in general, governments have really rallied and tried to get things going as fast as they can, which is a real testament to the industries.
And a real sort of fillip for those local production economies. And another story that you highlighted was a HBO Max acquisition as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So we saw, obviously, I Hate Susie, also from Bad Wolf, for Sky being picked up by HBO Max. It just sort of ties into what we were saying before in terms of big acquisitions out of the US for international shows. But that was quite a nice, obviously, that show did really well here. Clearly, it's got the potential to sort of cross the pond, and we're seeing HBO Max, which, you know, I think it sort of had a number of its own original plans somewhat thrown into question by the pandemic, and they're hungry for content, and that's a classic example of them just sort of swooping in for something and filling that void for themselves. So it's really exciting. I think we'll probably see a few more of those in the weeks to come.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. Let's keep our eyes peeled for those. You know, many people have said to me that, you know, MIPCOM this year is going to be much more of a distributor's market. So, I mean, I don't know whether that's true or not, but what we are seeing is some new players in the distribution business as well, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. It's actually really, really exciting to see production companies properly get into the distribution space. I suppose it's not altogether surprising, but for example, like Woodcut Media, run by the amazing Kate Beale, now expanding into distribution with Woodcut International. From what I understand, it's something that they've been thinking about for some time, but to actually sort of execute that during the pandemic, I suppose the question is obviously whether they feel confident enough to be able to, I mean, certainly for their own shows, they'd be able to distribute those. But, you know, will they move into third party acquisitions as well? How that kind of entity will evolve is quite interesting to me. And we've also seen, yeah, obviously with TCB founders Paul Heaney and Dina as well, obviously starting Bossa Nova, so another sort of distribution co-production group there as well. And also I just wanted to highlight, I believe it was Plimsoll sort of buying Magnify Media, which is another interesting distribution play there as well. I'm fascinated to see how that works, whether other distributors are perhaps are perhaps threatened by that, or I guess the question is really the third party things, whether these new groups will look to buy other content from other producers or just distribute their own. So I'm fascinated to see how that works out.
It's interesting time to launch a distribution business, isn't it? Presumably, you know, content is going to be at a real premium. Fresh content is going to be at a real premium, particularly over the next 3-4 months. So in that sense, if you've got access to it, if you've got the connections, if you've got either your own content or, you know, the right connections to bring that content to market, then it's a brilliant time. And it's obviously there's quite a big gap that Q Media used to fill that is essentially open now. And we're seeing lots of these new businesses. Abacus as well, obviously, we had Jonathan Ford on the show a few weeks ago. You know, lots of these new businesses that are uh, they're rushing to plug that gap.
I have to say, I think MIPCOM, it's a real shame that it's not actually underway, because I think it's one thing, obviously, to be in that virtual environment and to sort of see things happening, you know, on your computer screen. But it's another to really be on the ground and to sort of see the gap in the stands, you know, to see who's there, to see who's not there. I mean, the fall of Q was pretty big. I mean, that was, you know, a number of months ago, earlier at the top of the year. But in a way, I mean, it's wonderful to see how folks from that business have just been able to sort of pick themselves up, start new firms, and producers like Woodcut, obviously, which I believe had worked closely with Q, you know, are able to innovate and do something on their own in terms of them being able to sort of use that to their advantage. It sparked some innovation in them to just strike out on their own and realize, oh, actually, we can just do this for ourselves.
Now more than ever, you know, fortune favors the brave. If you ever want to try something new, experiment, or actually, you know, do that thing with your business that you've been thinking about for a long time. I mean, now's the opportunity to experiment and grow, isn't it? Rather than just, you know, hoping that your regular business plan works or not. If you can take things in your own hands and take a new proposition to market, now's the time to do it.
I mean, I think so. I think you just have to sort of, like, even with someone like Woodcut Media, obviously they have the backing of Anthology Group. So I think you really do need some investment, and you need to be able to manage the risk. I think for a lot of companies, they probably, I mean, I think as much as I hate to say this, I think they're probably the exceptions to the rule. Mm. I think people are able to innovate, but I think it's all about managing risk and really just making very smart use of resources at this point, because as we know, this pandemic has just been brutal for our sector. I mean, it's really, I think people are really struggling. So it's really great to see companies like that sort of doing something different and clearly feeling that, you know, being confident enough to take that step. In general, probably people are, they might be a little bit more risk averse going forward too, you know, for some of the smaller companies, which is understandable.
Fascinating that the changes that this winter is presumably going to ring on the industry, and we'll be keeping our eyes out for those. Co-production and high-end international co-production has been a massive growth area over the last few years, but it's been experiencing somewhat of a downturn during the pandemic, hasn't it?
I think so. I think just sort of the physical challenges in terms of travel restrictions. I guess co-productions are probably the most obvious area in terms of taking a hit. But again, not to harp on about my conversation with Jane Tranter too much, but I sort of put this question to her, and she sort of said that co-productions are still, you know, are still very much possible. It's just that instead of being spread out across various different countries, they're kind of you'll have the different various partners, but production is focused very much in one place. And the UK obviously is a great place to do that, hopefully until the next round of restrictions, which I'm praying to God don't affect our industry. But yeah, so I think productions from what someone, you know, of her ilk, very high level has to say, like, it seems to be that, you know, deals are still being made, or certainly people are looking forward to keeping up with those co-production deals. But it's just production is largely concentrated in sort of one market rather than spread out.
I read in one of your pieces recently, which Anne-Marie Corvin wrote, which was around Spain and production in Spain. There's a particular production business, Marina Films, who are actually going into production on a feature with no insurance. I mean, that's super brave, I have to say. You know, that's probably something that I don't think I would quite have the stomach for.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I have to say it's really worrying when you think about, you know, I don't think it's them alone. I mean, there's so many productions, both on the film and TV side, where people have just had to sort of go it alone. They haven't had the support. I mean, in Spain, you know, it's not, the situation is simply not the same as what we're seeing in Canada with their sort of $50 million dollar fund there, and in the UK with the £500 million. Without support, I think producers simply are feeling that they just have to kind of stick to the protocols, do a good job as they can sort of muster, keep people in bubbles, and hope to God that they can, if something happens, that they can, I suppose, quarantine people, and hopefully the rest of production can kind of continue unhindered. Because yeah, I mean, what else can you really do? I suppose. I mean, in the UK here as well, you know, keep in mind this kind of insurance fund that we've got in place, it's still not live. I mean, they're opening applications now and they're processing them, but ultimately we still need that European Union approval. So until that scheme is not going to go live. And I believe the applications, you know, your projects can sort of backdate from July. But still, I think it's, if that scheme isn't extended, I think that you are looking kind of at a very small window of time there, and it's not ideal, really.
No, absolutely not. Well, good luck to anybody going into production right now, you know, whether they're covered insurance or, you know, and particularly if they're not. Goes back to what we were saying earlier on, fortune favors the brave, I would imagine. Minori, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today in what is a very different kind of MIPCOM experience, but I've really enjoyed having you on the show. Can you believe it's 4 months since we last spoke? The 4 months seems to have gone by in a heartbeat.
I know, I was thinking that because the last time I think we were sort of scratching our heads about the next DG. And I remember you asking me about, oh yeah, who's it going to be, and all of this, and yeah, obviously now we know who, and we wait with eager anticipation to see how Tim Davey navigates the Beeb through this period. But yeah, I mean, a lot can happen, and yet nothing can happen too in that period. I find quite sad, but you know, here we are, we're still muddling through it, and I think we'll get there. You know, I mean, if anything, we've seen a lot of positive news stories come through this period too. A lot of people who are innovating and trying new things, and it always keeps our jobs very, very interesting. We just want to support people doing their jobs in film and TV as best we can.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. We'll keep our eyes on Variety and see all these the stories that you're going to be featuring in the weeks and the months ahead. So thanks again for taking some time out of your really busy schedule to speak to us.
Thanks, Justin.
All right. Bye. Well, thanks for joining us. That's about it for today's MIPCOM mini show. We'll be back tomorrow night when I'll be joined by Broadcast Magazine's international editor, John Elms, as we look at the highlights and key news stories of day one of MIPCOM Online Plus, including the Ted Sarandos interview. Until then, stay safe.